Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Joining us now to talk about all things involving the Indians, their general manager, Mike Chernoff, on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Mike, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
It's great to talk with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, let's start with the news today that Roberto Perez put out there himself, Mike. I know he went on the 10-day IL. He put out there that he's having surgery on his thumb. What is the timeline for Roberto to come back?
So he had the surgery today. Okay. Went to see Dr. Graham in Dayton, Ohio. Had the surgery, successful surgery. We need to kind of regroup and figure out what the estimated timeline is at this point. Obviously, not a short term thing when you have surgery, but I don't want to give time frames yet without hearing from the doctor post surgery and putting our heads together to figure out what that could look like.
Mike, I thought it was a little wild when you spend 20% of the payroll on catchers, but that's looking like a pretty good idea right now. What was it about Austin Hedges? I mean, you know, to carry $9 million on two catchers, given where the payroll's at, that was really surprising. I think a lot of people would say that. What was it? Was it specifically Austin, or what was it that you thought it was wise to devote that much to one position?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of factors. It's not like we foresaw this, obviously, and we certainly don't want this. We want Roberto back with the team as quickly as we can get him back. But at the same time, we knew that we were sort of lacking the kind of upper level depth. We have a great catching prospect in Bo Naylor coming through our system. But we were lacking the upper level catching depth. We had a lot of cost control in other places on our team, and we felt like it's been a real advantage to us to have just great defensive catchers to help our pitching staff. Roberto has obviously been that pretty consistently for us, but Austin is the same thing and is bringing just incredible game calling, blocking and receiving, throwing, all the things, all the areas that are important to us. He brings that to the table. So, you know, we felt like even though it may be a little bit redundant, you know that your catcher's not going to play every day. So just to know that we had some stability there and some depth, you know, was important to us. And obviously in a situation like this, it covers us. It's obviously a huge benefit now that we do have an injury there.
Mike, let's talk about that pitching, which has been the strength of this franchise for a long time now. I want to talk about Sam Hentges, who we actually had him on last week. We thought he was making his first major league start, but technically he didn't. You guys went with the opener in that game. That's something that's become much bigger, or really, I shouldn't even say much bigger. It didn't exist, really, and now it's become big in the last few years. You guys haven't used it a lot. Why the decision specifically with Hentges to go with the opener last week, and will that continue when he is scheduled to, you know, kind of start?
Yeah, I mean, it's a new strategy in the game, but it makes a lot of sense. I mean, what you're trying to do is maximize the number of times that a guy can get through the lineup. And Sam wasn't built up to be a 100-pitch starter at this point, right? He had been in our bullpen. He'd only been built up to, I forget what it was, 50 or so pitches in our major league bullpen at the time. So you sort of knew that we were going to have a shorter outing. It's also his first real chance in the major leagues. And so it's not like having, you know, the really sort of stable, consistent starters that we've had in the past. So we felt like this was a way that we could maybe maximize his ability to get through their lineup multiple times, and thought that it made sense to kind of play the matchups a little bit in that way. And especially with having a left-handed starter like Sam, you know, use a righty to start the game against some of the tougher righties, or have them stack their lineup differently so that we can maximize and optimize Sam's ability to get through as many times as he could and go as deep into the game as he could. In terms of going forward, I think it's a, you know, we may continue to use that strategy. We may not. It's going to be really dependent on the opponent, on how Sam's doing, on how the rest of our bullpen is doing, and on how we see the matchup. So I can't give you a, you know, a full answer that we're just going to lock something in. I think what we're seeing in today's game is that really being flexible and building the best strategy for each game is the best way to go about it.
Well, Mike, Terry just outed you guys. He told the media Berto's going to be months, not weeks. Oh, I'm sorry. It's weeks. It's not weeks. It's months. So it looks like this is a pretty long-term thing for Roberto.
Yeah, and I mean, with surgery, we sort of knew that that would be the case. We just have to figure out what the exact timeline looks like.
How, you guys have to be thrilled with where you're at, obviously, in the standings. It was a terrific road trip. I'm actually writing a story on this within the next week or two, but I just want to ask you, how do you guys keep doing this year after year after year? And I'll go back to 20 years ago, Mark Shapiro traded Roberto Alomar and said later on that was the worst trade of his career and it's the biggest regret of his career because you can't rebuild and contend at the same time. You have to pick a lane and do one or the other. You guys have figured out how to do both. And the Rays do it, obviously. Oakland does it consistently. How has the game changed since then, or what have you guys figured out that allows you to continue to rebuild while contending at the same time?
That's our goal. Our goal is to sustain competitiveness, and it means that there are often difficult moves, especially from a fan base perspective. I mean, look, I got, you know, four kids, two of them are boys who are 10 and 8 years old that like draw, you know, real attachment to players. We all get attached to players, but to try to sustain competitiveness, you have to make difficult decisions and constantly sort of, it's not a rebuilding as much as just, you know, building the constant pipeline of guys coming through the system. And we're trying to do that in the draft and internationally where it doesn't take away from your major league team ever. And we feel like we've had some success there. I mean, you can see some of the young guys either coming through our system or that are just getting to the big leagues, especially on our pitching staff so far, where we've been able to do that. But at times you have to make the tough decisions as guys, you know, start to make more money or when you see an opportunity to kind of restock your system while you're trying to compete. It's a hard needle to thread, but it's the needle that we try to thread. And thankfully, over the past 8 or 9 years, we feel like we've been successful in it. You know, it's always a challenging strategy. And like I said, it's definitely hard for fans to understand it. But we know our goal is to win as many championships as we can and to try to sustain that competitiveness. So we try to thread that needle.
Mike, I have a 10-year-old who really didn't like you very much when Jason Kipnis left. And he really didn't like you when Frankie was traded. So are your boys, do they get mad at you when you have to trade a Francisco Lindor when you let some of those guys go?
They don't get mad at me. They understand how the job works. But yeah, I mean, I feel the same way, right? You build an attachment to players. I do think one of the things in today's game is that it's a little bit different, right? Even when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, there was a lot more ability for teams. Just the economic structure of the game was very different, and teams kept players for much longer. That doesn't happen even for larger market teams. There's a whole lot more turnover. So I think we all need to get used to that. But at the same time, yes, of course, we build that type of attachment to players, and our kids do, and that can be hard. But you know what? We have the youngest team in baseball right now, actually by a wide margin. And we've got some really exciting young players that at least my kids and I are getting really pumped about. So, you know, we hope that we can put an exciting product out there. Even though it's young and a little bit inconsistent, an exciting product out there where fans can continue to build those attachments to our players.
You're right about the big market clubs. You know, the Red Sox traded Mookie Betts. I would guess that between Baez, Bryant, and Rizzo, at least two of those three guys are gone from the Cubs at the end of this year. However, this year is even more extreme, Mike. And I know it's factored in what happened last year with no fans in the stands, but your payroll, yeah, I mean, you guys have at least in the past, even when, you know, you've never had the top payroll in the league, but you guys have had a fairly competitive payroll most years. This year, not the case. It's around $40 million. That has to be challenging for you. And I would imagine behind the scenes, a little frustrating. No,
every organization has its challenges. Yeah. And we're a small market. We are in a small market, and so we have to live within that reality. And obviously, the pandemic sort of magnified some financial challenges across the whole industry. our goal and our challenge is how do we continue to build a sustainably competitive team, regardless of whatever those payroll constraints are.
Right.
And I think, you know, we have been, you know, largely successful over the past 8 or 9 years in doing that. You know, we have the best record in the American League over the past 9 years, despite spending almost $1 billion less than the next best team. And hopefully this year we felt like we could put together a team that's capable of winning a championship, especially with the pitching staff that we have and right. some of the young guys in our bullpen and potentially even on our position player club that could do that regardless of where our payroll was.
Is there payroll flexibility to make a trade at the deadline if you guys are in the mix?
You know, those aren't even conversations that we've necessarily had. At the same time, in the 18 years that I've been here, that has never been the challenge at the deadline. The challenge at the deadline is almost always matching up with another team and figuring out from a baseball standpoint whether or not a trade will work. I'm not saying resources are unlimited, and that's obviously not the case anywhere, but that's never stood in the way at a trade deadline trade for us in the past.
We're talking with Mike Chernoff, Indians GM. Mike, let's talk about the first base situation. I know Naylor's getting worked in a little in the mix there, but obviously it's been ugly. Jake Bowers and Yu Chang have both struggled mightily at the plate. Yu Chang doesn't have obviously a lot of experience in the field, so I don't want to be critical of him defensively because it's a new position for him. Will Bobby Bradley at some point get a chance, and how long can you go with such little production at first base?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you look offensively, that's obviously one spot that's been tough for us to kind of get anything going production-wise. And Tito's tried to mix and match and do the best that he could with the group that's out there. And we've seen some signs of life, actually. I mean, in the past week, Jake has put up some of his best at-bats in the time that he had. You're seeing Tito play Naylor there a little bit more to work in some of the righties in our lineup into the outfield. But we haven't had anything going consistently there. I can't tell you exactly sort of time frames or anything like that, but we do feel really excited about Bobby Bradley. You know, the AAA season is just starting. We've played two games so far after the sort of strange alternate site that we had going before. And we're kind of hoping that Bobby can build off of the great spring that he had and really kind of lock in the changes that he made both with his body and his swing to show us that he can really help us up here. I think we're all excited about that future. I don't know when it will happen, but we feel, you know, like there have been some signs of life on the major league team, and we have depth behind this group. So, you know, we feel like we can get production out of that position, even though we haven't gotten it yet.
When you look at the numbers Shane Bieber's putting up, he's sort of a unicorn. If you look historically, you got to go back. I mean, you know, Lincecum, I guess, but there's not many guys who at his age with his experience level have done what he's been able to do. Why couldn't winning a Cy Young merit a contract extension? Even Blake Snell, when he got the Cy Young, he was rewarded with an extension from Tampa, and I realize he's no longer in Tampa, but why couldn't something get done with Shane in the offseason coming off of Cy Young? And do you expect an extension to get done with him at some point?
Yeah, I could never say yes or no on those things. We either have an extension or you don't have an extension. Shane is here for, you know, the foreseeable future. Even just under the, you know, club control and arbitration system, we have 4 years with him. So we continue to have conversations with a lot of players about multi-year contracts. We obviously love what Shane brings both on the mound and in the clubhouse. I mean, he's a tremendous competitor, tremendous leader within the clubhouse. And obviously his performance speaks for itself. So yes, of course we want to have him long term. But those are conversations that obviously I won't comment on. And you know, I think we're hopeful that we can potentially get something worked out, but obviously we don't have anything worked out yet.
Why wasn't a Cy Young enough to get something done?
I don't know exactly what you mean by that. I mean, we've signed plenty of guys who were Cy Youngs in the past. I don't think the Cy Young necessarily has anything to do with whether or not we can agree with a player on a contract. I think, you know, he's trying to figure out what is his market and what is right for him. And we're trying to figure out what are we capable of doing and how can we make sure that we can build championship teams with him on our payroll going forward past when he would be in free agency. And those are challenging dynamics. It doesn't have anything to do with whether or not he won a Cy Young. It's more trying to figure out what's kind of the sweet spot of whether or not a deal can get done.
Mike, what is? Are there any limitations because of guys pitching? So, you got young pitchers; they pitched very few innings last year. Do you have innings limits on these guys, especially like guys, a guy like Tristan McKenzie, who's had a lot of injuries in the past?
It's a great question. And probably 15 years ago, I would have said, absolutely, we would do that. Yeah. We were, I would say, less precise in how we could kind of figure out what was right for each guy. And so you had to go to innings limits as the thing that you were tracking, or pitch limits within a game. In today's world, these guys do so much stuff with our sports science group. And, you know, they're so in tune with our athletic training group. We're tracking all sorts of things on them to figure out how they're responding after each game or each bullpen that they throw. And we're providing them the care to make sure that they can make their next start and feel good about it. But also to make sure that, you know, we're monitoring things beyond just innings. We're monitoring strength levels, and we're monitoring the things kind of behind the scenes to make sure that they're responding okay, and that we feel that that health-wise and durability-wise, they remain in a good spot. We feel great about that right now. I can't tell you what that's going to look like in August. I mean,
right.
A lot of these guys have never pitched that deep into a season, but we will remain on top of it. And as long as they're responding well, I think we'll feel good about continuing to get them out there.
I don't know what the number is of how many teams have a rotation full of homegrown players, but it can't be very high. What does that – is that sort of the ultimate blueprint is to – I mean, pitching such a premium, obviously, you pay the most to get it, whether in trade or in free agency. Is that the ultimate plan, is to be able to draft and develop your own pitching rotation? Did you ever think that was possible? And what does that allow you to do elsewhere on the field?
Yeah, I mean, the ultimate plan is put a sustainable winner on the field.
Sure.
A huge component of that, especially in today's market where starting pitching prices are so inflated, is to try to build your pitching staff from within. And, you know, if you look back, some of the guys that we got in the past were trades, right? Like the Trevor Bauer, Corey Kluber, guys like that, Carlos Carrasco. But those guys came into our system when they were still in the minor leagues, and we were able to develop this pipeline of pitchers that sort of had come through our system to compete on our major league team, and we've been able to replenish that. So it's a huge credit to our group of scouts, player development staff, major league staff, to help transition those guys into successful roles on our major league team. And I think you're right. It allows us to do a whole lot more, right? The first question you guys asked me was, how do we allocate that much to the catching, right, to the two catchers that we have? Well, we couldn't do that if we had to go out and sign a free agent starter, right? But the fact that we have a group of cost-controlled, young, homegrown starting pitchers allows us to do a whole lot more with whatever other flexibility we may have.
Do you think the next thing is, like, we've seen this a little with the opener, we talked about this before, you know, I was saying before that if you guys make it, you know, we're looking ahead, right? I'm saying if you guys make a deadline deal, I said to Jason, I said, one of the things I'd like you guys to do is make a strength even stronger and add to an already good bullpen. Do you think we might see a day where a smaller market team especially says, you know what, we're going to punt on starting pitching altogether. We're going to get 10, 11, 12, 13 young arms that can throw hard, and we're going to do bullpen by committee. You'd probably have to have like 15, 16 guys, right, between the minors and cycling them up and have them pitch two innings or whatever. I mean, could we see a day where that's happening?
Adam, I love it, man. These are the types of conversations we have internally all the time. You see other teams doing some of that, right? It's the opener strategy. You see the Tampas or Milwaukee's. Yeah. Other small market teams that have a couple of really good starters, but maybe less stability later in their rotation, are going more to that strategy. I think we're seeing our bullpen, the group of guys that we have, and they're young and they're going to be here for a while, but it's such a strong group that it's actually really beneficial to have those guys pitching in as many games as we can have them pitching. So, you know, I don't know that you'd ever see a team try to get through every single game that way. Right, with like one, right, two, three inning stints from pitchers. And I always think you're going to have the guys that sort of bump up, the Shane Beavers or whoever, where you're going, right, to want them pitching as deep into a game as you can. But I think for us and for a lot of small market teams that have to be creative and have to think outside the box, that type of strategy is starting to make more and more sense for us. You also have to remember that rosters expanded from 25 to 26. Right. So last year when they made that change, that allows you even more flexibility to carry. We've been carrying a ninth reliever on our team. And when you have nine relievers, you're less concerned about having the emergency depth the next day if you run through everyone in your bullpen. So that allows you to kind of tap into that strategy even more.
for the last 2 years, Mike, you guys have had very few injuries. Like, I am such a dork. I keep my own spreadsheets of every team's major league roster, and I update every day with transactions. And there's like half the teams in the league have 10, 12, 14 guys on the injured list. You didn't have a lot of guys last year. I know Cam Hill started on the 60, and you got Roberto in there now, but you've had so few injuries. Luck, or is there something to it?
It's both. You know, you can never say it's not luck. And the injury like what Roberto had or even what Cam Hill had, those are things that were you just get unlucky. There's not a whole lot you can do to protect guys from those sort of what you'd call traumatic injuries. What we have been, I think, you know, based on the work that we're doing behind the scenes, what I think we've been successful at doing is preventing as many of the soft tissue injuries as possible. And look, you're always going to have guys who have a soft tissue injury and there's nothing you can do about it. A guy blows out or tears a hamstring or something like that. But we have done a lot of protective things from a sports science and athletic training perspective to try to prepare our guys to be in the best spot for those not to happen. Now, I'm knocking on wood like the entire time that I'm talking now because you guys are really putting me on the spot here. But
there's no jinxes. You're too smart. You know there's no such thing as jinxes.
But I can tell you that, you know, even when we do get unlucky and we're going to have some of those injuries,
sure.
The work that's happening behind the scenes and sort of the sophisticated level that our groups have gotten to in their ability to do that type of programming is really helping us, no doubt about it.
This is something I've always wondered. Is it, when we're talking about relievers and building bullpens and everything, is it harder to evaluate young relievers like Karinchak or Class A who just don't have that many minor league innings rather than a starter is going to be down there? You know he's going to be down there for X number of years. He's going to throw 5-6 innings. You have a lot of data on minor league starters. It feels like nowadays you don't have as much data on relievers. Does that make it more difficult to evaluate what you're getting? Or because they're only out there for an inning or so, do you sense that you know what you're getting?
No, I think in general, you know, the less track record that a guy has, the harder it is to evaluate him. And when you have relievers, that's just kind of built into it, right? It's like a platoon bat. It's hard to evaluate. Did he just get lucky that year in his 100 plate appearances, or was it a real skill? So there's no doubt that it's harder to evaluate with less track record. I will say some of the advances in understanding pitch metrics have helped us kind of make that process a little bit easier. So we don't just have to evaluate the performance in the innings that a guy is pitching. We can actually measure the break of the pitch or the, you know, the depth of the sink on a pitch or the rise on his fastball or exactly the location a guy is hitting. And that's not perfect by any means. And you have to sort of zoom out and see the bigger picture and how a guy competes, but it at least gives you a better sense of like, is this performance real? And would we expect that given the types of pitches that this guy throws and the way that he throws them rather than just did this guy get lucky and have good performance in the short stints that he had?
We're talking with Indians GM, just a couple more minutes with Indians GM Mike Chernoff on 92.3 The Fan, WKRK-FM, Cleveland Heights, Cleveland. Mike, big picture baseball here. You know, Jason and I were talking about the shifts. We would both, even though we're both huge baseball fans, seems artificial. We'd like to see the shifts gone. I think it's better for the game. I think it's more entertaining for the fans if there's more balls in play. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I love the runner on second base in extra innings. Jason hates it. I love the three batter minimum rule with the pitchers.
Hate it.
I love that. And I'm okay with
Have
the
you talked to Tito
extra.
About that, Adam?
Yeah.
What's that?
Terry really hates it.
Have you talked to Tito about that, Adam?
He's so old school. I get it. But we got to entertain the fans, Mike. It can't be about what 60-year-old managers want. It's got to be about what 20-year-old kids want. You know what I mean? We got to entertain the fans. That's important.
Yeah, and Tito's super progressive. It's just the three-batter minimum that he can't stand.
He hates it. I love it.
I think I'm with you. Honestly, I think I'm a huge traditionalist. I love the game. I mean, you guys know, like, I have a baseball catch with my dad once a month, and we've been doing it for 33 years of my life. Like, baseball is everything, and the traditions of the game are everything to me and my family. At the same time, I think the game has changed. Right. When you used to watch a game 20 years ago, it looked very different than the game you're watching today. So even though we didn't manage that change, it has changed. And I think it's important that we think about how do we manage the change better to keep it as exciting as it was when I was a kid for the kids today. Right. Games are longer. There's more strikeouts. There's fewer hits. There's fewer balls in play. I think the way you know, there are fewer stolen bases, right? The fun things that we all love watching have definitely changed, and I'm wide open to the different types of changes or modifications or ways to kind of manage that and keep the game as exciting as possible.
You think we'll have the DH in the National League permanently next year after the CBA?
I don't know. I really don't know. I've always been a fan of that. I mean, it feels crazy to me that there are different rules. But I've only been with the Indians. And so I'm on one side of it where we always have a DH, and it's a pain when we go to a National League city and have to like play guys out of position and not have our DH. I understand the other side of it, but I've always been in favor of it for sure.
Last thing, Mike, Sam Hentges was on with us, like I said, last week. And I asked him if Franmil Reyes wrestled any two members of the Indians lineup, who would win, any two players or Franmil? And Sam Hentges said it wouldn't even be close. Franmil would defeat any two players on the Indians in a wrestling match. Do you agree or disagree?
I'm glad you didn't ask me what if he wrestles two members of the front office.
Oh, that would be easy. You guys would be destroyed.
I think in either case, he would destroy just about anything. I'm trying to think through our roster. I cannot think of two. I'm not even sure I can think of three guys that could take him on. He is the only saving grace you have is that he is like such a fun loving personality and guy that maybe he wouldn't totally wear you down. Maybe he'd give you a chance, but strength wise, no doubt about it.
I'd say it's fun watching the ball come off his bat, man. When he gets one it looks like he hits it 500 feet every time.
Yep. No doubt about
it. He's fun. All right, Mike, good stuff. We appreciate the time. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
Great to talk to you guys.
All right, Mike Chernoff.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.